earth we're up to this morning, because we've been all over the Bible. We started on different themes and then we've gone back to other themes. Hebrews 11 verse 6. Without faith it's impossible to please God. Hebrews 11 verse 6. Well done. Yeah, well done. You did it without. That's good. I wanted you to remember that, because that, if you like, is a bit of a foundation for what we're looking at today. And we're starting a series, very short mini-series, but you'll see why in a second. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. The writer of Hebrews says in chapter 11, and he starts with faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. So why today? Why are we starting on this journey today? Well, the writer goes on in chapter 11 to list a whole group, sometimes quite surprising names appear in that whole section that he writes down, of men and women of faith, people in the Jewish, the Israelite history, if you like, that have shown this faith and now are the standards by which they are looking as a nation to follow, okay? Men and women of faith. And we felt that it would be a good time to start looking at some of these names and what it is about them that has allowed them to be written about in Hebrews 11. Their name, if you like, immortalized there for us. What do these people have to say to us in 2026, in other words? So we're just going to pick on a very few, and me today, you might have guessed by now, I'm doing Gideon, because Gideon appears in Hebrews 11. We find his story, and it was just the very beginning of it that Marilyn read to us in Judges, and three chapters basically, 6, 7 and 8. Have to say, the sources say that more verses are dedicated to Gideon, about who was a judge, than any of the other judges. But hey, it was only by a few verses that he gained his notoriety, so, you know, that's by the by. He is, though, considered to be one of the most outstanding heroes of Israel's early history. Why? Why? Well, we need to firstly look at the context, okay? Israel have enjoyed a period of peace for the last 40 years. Before that, they had been plagued by the Canaanite nation, and one of the other judges, Deborah, and her military leader, Barak, had sort of subjugated the Canaanites, defeated the Canaanites, and there was this 40 years. Now, you might hear more about them next week. That's just a little tweak, okay? But I'm on to Gideon. So 40 years of peace, if you like, have happened as a result of Deborah and Barak's intervention with God's guidance. It was 40 years, which gives us plenty of time, and it certainly gave Israel plenty of time to take their eyes off God. It's what we call vertical vision when we look at God and keep our eyes on Him. And all the while the Jewish nation did that, and they honored God, and they worshipped Him and Him alone, life was beautiful because God honored them and blessed them. But we know, don't we, that generations are fickle, and memories are even worse. And people over time forget, and they look around them. In other words, horizontal vision. They look around them. Oh, I'd like a bit of that. Oh, maybe that God over there that they worship, oh, well, they seem to be prospering. Or perhaps we'll have a bit of him as well. Oh, well, come on, let's raise up a standard for him. And, you know, we look at the nations around us, we look at the people who we are living beside, and we think, oh, They've got a nice house. Wouldn't mind one like that. Oh, new car. You know, it's subtle. It's subtle, but it happens. We are not immune. And in those 40 years, the Israelite nation had been lured, if you like, away from God, and their eyesight had become Baal, who was a god that they worshipped. And we hear about the Asherah as well. The Asherah was the female of God, so of Baal. So the Asherah poles they had together. As a consequence, God had removed his protection from around them. And they'd found themselves strangled, if you like, by the Midianite nation. They were a nomadic tribe, but the Midianites, who, they weren't daft, these Midianites. For 7 years, what they did was they allowed the Israelites to get on with life. They'd plant their crops. They'd do all the hard work. And then, when it was time to harvest everything and to gain the rewards of this, the Midianites, plus their mates that they got with them, the Amalekites and others from the east, they'd pile in to Israel and they'd literally ravage the lot. 7 years they did this. They'd ravaged the whole thing so that there was nothing left. And that is where we find ourselves with Gideon. The text actually says they were like locusts. Well, we don't experience locusts in this country, but those that you do, you see that there's nothing. There's a complete death of anything once locusts have been in. Midianites were doing exactly the same. As a consequence, the nation of Israel had become small agriculturally, economically, and socially. They were a demoralized, defeated nation, feeling hard done by and helpless. They cry to God. Well, maybe he will help us. In fact, you've said you are our God, therefore you will help us, won't you? That's basically what they were saying. And Marilyn read for us in the beginning of chapter 6, a prophet who comes along and says, hang on a minute, you take your eyes off God, and you still expect to be blessed by him? They've stopped worshipping him, but they haven't recognized their sin. They don't recognize that it's their problem. But because he is their God, they want his protection still. Sound familiar? Be careful when we aren't wholeheartedly walking constantly with God. That's all I say, be careful. Charles Spurgeon put it beautifully. The Lord does not permit his children to sin successfully. I think that's brilliant. You know? He does not permit us to get away with sin and be successful. Just doesn't happen. He goes on to say that God is not a permissive parent who allows his children to do as they please. His ultimate purpose is for us to conform to the image of his Son. Have a look at it, if you like, in Romans 8:29. Basically, I'll pray see that. It says to become like Jesus, who is without sin. That is what Paul writes there in Romans 8, verse 29. So, into this backdrop, we are introduced to Gideon. He's threshing grain, but he's threshing grain in a wine press. Now, the sources that I read said that wine presses were normally in valleys because they brought the grapes down from the hills and took them into wine presses down in the valleys. That makes sense because it's well hidden and it's out of sight. So if you've got these Midianites on the rampage and you want to save some of your crop at least, you hide it, don't you? So he's down there. He's threshing and sifting grain. Now that was normally done up the top of a hill Why? Because it was a nasty job to do. You get chaff everywhere, and you want the wind to take the chaff away and leave the grain. So you're normally out in plain sight when you are doing that particular job. So Gideon, he's down in the valley in a wine press. You can't get, it's got to be done in very small quantities, and it's very uncomfortable work. You get it all in your eyes. It's just nasty, just nasty. So that is what Gideon is resorted to doing, to get as much as he can without the Midianites realizing what he's up to. And into this wine press scenario, we suddenly, when we look on in the carry on in the chapter 6, see a visitor arrive. An angel appears. An angel? The angel appears, I should say. Who calls Gideon? Well, let's have a look at it. It's Judges chapter 6, and I'm going to read verse 13 to 15. The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. That's verse 12. The Lord is with you, mighty warrior, says this person who suddenly wanders into the wine press. But, sir, Gideon replied, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian. And the Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hands. Am I not sending you? But Lord, Gideon asked, how can I save Israel? How can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. Okay? So there we meet Gideon for the first time, if you like, and hear him. This is just a visitor who's just walked into the wine press and, you know, mighty warrior. Interesting, actually, before Christmas we were talking about El Gibor, hero. And the word that is used there for mighty warrior is Gibor. So this angel who walks in, the Lord who walks in, says, hello, hero, mighty hero. You can imagine Gideon sort of looking over his shoulder and thinking, is there someone else here? Because it's not me he's talking to. Gideon's response is dismissive at best. If, why, where are the questions he puts to him? The Lord has abandoned us. This is Gideon's truth. It's his truth. It's not, you know, this is how he feels. He doesn't feel like a hero. He can't see any upside to the situation he's in. In effect, he's saying, don't be daft. But the angel perseveres. Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel. Really? Really? Says Gideon. There is nothing remotely brave or warrior-like about me. I'm from a humble background, the weakest clan in the tribe of Manasseh, and I'm the least of my family. Now, all of that is true. So why does God pick on Gideon? Well, I think we find an answer in 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 20. Well, I've got it here and now I've lost it. 1 Corinthians 1. 26 to 29, and this is what Paul writes here. Brothers, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are so that no one may boast before him. It is all of him. He goes on to say. God's choice, if you like. And I think, you see, what others see is not what God sees. He sees our potential. And he chooses us. Theologian Warren Wiersbe says this: God is a great encouragement to people who have a hard time accepting themselves and believing that God can make anything out of them or do anything with them. Can I let that sink in for a minute? God is a great encouragement to people who have a hard time accepting themselves and believing that God can make anything out of them or do anything with them. It's important for us to hear that. Because isn't that sometimes what we say? I'm no good. I can't do anything. You know, my voice isn't heard. And God says, I can use you. I can use you. And I look around here, including myself, and God says, I can use you. Okay, so God tests what he's being heard, what he hears here, by saying, in effect, okay, if this is true, then will you please wait here and I'll go and prepare food for you and I'll bring it back to you. And the visitor agrees, okay, I'll wait. And he waits. I mean, when I think about this, I think, you know, he waits a long time because Gideon goes off. He has to prepare a goat. He cooks the goat, prepares the broth as well. He also gets some flour and he makes unleavened bread and he brings this back. I don't know how long that takes. But yeah, maybe a day. I don't know. Hours. Probably a long time. And the visitor is waiting all that time. Now, he brings it back, and the visitor says, oh, lovely, thank you very much. Put it on this rock. And he puts it all on the rock, pours the broth over it, and then the angel takes the staff, the Lord takes the staff, his staff, drops it onto the rock, and the whole thing is consumed, and then the angel disappears. Gideon knows he's been in the presence of God. He knows. And he says, woe is me, I'm going to die. Because anyone who's been in the presence of God, that's the immediate reaction. I'm going to die. I'm not worthy to be in his presence, therefore I will die. And God actually says to him, no, you're all right. Now that's interesting because the angel is gone, but God is still there. All right? So that's, you know, that's for another time. But there is a spiritual transformation that is going on in Gideon at this stage. He begins to realize he's been in the presence of the divine. And that is why later on that day, he goes to, in the evening, he hears God again. God speaks to him again and says, you know that Baal altar that your family have outside your house with the Asherah pole? Well, I want that gone. I want you to tear it down. And I want you to take the wood from the Asherah pole and I want you to take your parents' second best bull and sacrifice it using the Asherah wood. Okay, you can read it for yourself. It's only 3 chapters long, but it's great reading. We don't know how God spoke to him. It might have been in a dream. It might have been physically. Who knows? But he wanted Gideon to create a new altar. In effect, getting rid of the rubbish and setting God back in his rightful place. This was not without real cost, you know, because the Midianites had ravaged for 7 years. Therefore, any animals that they slaughtered, any bread that they made, meant that they would have far less to feed themselves on over the coming months. So it's not without cost, but it's also, Gideon does this. He actually does what God has asked him to do, but he does it at night for fear of parents and for fear of community. What actually happens is that in the morning, there's the new altar has been built in the place that God told him to build it, not the same place as the Baal altar. And the people of the village are saying, oh, who did this? Ah, Gideon did it. well, he needs to be killed. In which case, his father, Gideon's father, turns around and says, you're going to support Baal? Really? You're going to do that? Well, you know, if Baal's this clever god who's this great, well, let him avenge Gideon. You know, we're not going to do it for him. Let him do it. Oh, all right. So, again, you can read it. The biggest challenge Gideon had on his hands after this is coming next. And that's in chapter 6, verses 33 and 34. 6:34 says this, when I can find it. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. And I think that's very important. What actually happens next is that the Midianites decide that they're going to attack. And then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. This spiritual awareness, awakening that Gideon has had is now coming to be. Okay? Gideon was learning, in effect, to rely on God. And he would need to, because he was going to be severely tested. Really quickly, you know, because you've been in Sunday schools, I'm guessing, that, do you remember the story? Well, there's a fleece story involved. I'm not going to go into that, really, because I haven't got time to. But except to say that, yes, there was the fleece. Gideon did put out the fleece. But rather than, and God seems to give him reassurance in that fleece, even twice he does it, gives him reassurance. Rather than insisting Gideon rise to the desired level of commitment immediately, the Lord is nurturing and growing his faith. And I don't think there's anything wrong with us asking the Lord for reassurance. And that is what Gideon was doing. He allows us just to glimpse a little bit more of himself so that faith builds within us. Gideon really isn't saying, I won't do it unless you show me this. He's not saying that. He's actually saying, help me. Help me to know that I'm doing the right thing by doing what you're telling me to do. Shades of, do you remember John the Baptist? When he was in prison, about to be beheaded, he sends his disciples to Jesus to ask Jesus the question, are you really the one? It wasn't that John didn't know, it's just that he needed that reassurance that if he was going to go down a really dangerous road, that he was doing it with a reason and an end in progress. So it's shades of John the Baptist. Sarah Horsman, another theologian, says, God does not require us to have arrived, only to be moving in the right direction. So we don't have to have arrived all at once, we just need to move in the right direction with him. The story unfolds. Gideon gathers, because he knows the Midianites are about to attack, Gideon gathers a whole crew of people from the different tribes around him, the all Israelite tribes. 32,000 men come to his aid. Not bad. 32,000. And he must have been thinking to himself, oh, this is all right. That's great. Good. Yeah, I can do something with this, Lord. And then God says to him, too many. Too many. What I need you to do is to talk to these people, these men, and say, any of you who are a bit scared, any of you who have got other problems at home, any of you that don't want to be here, you can go. 22,000 left. He was down to 10,000. And then God looks at 10,000, and Gideon must have thought, okay. And then God says, no, still too many, too many. So he takes them to, do you remember the story, to the water's edge, and God says, only those who kneel, get the water in their hands and drink like that, so they're on the alert for the enemy, are the ones that you need to keep. The rest, send away. He's down to 300 by this time. 300 warriors to defeat the Midianites plus their mates, who are like locusts. Well, I'm not going into the story, you can read it. The reason why God asks him to have that much faith that he's going to do this is because this is about God and it's not about us. And if you think about it, all over our history, Christian history, God does amazing things with tiny little specks, if you like. And it's God, therefore. We can only attribute it to him, can't we? And that is what God wants to do. So, we think there's not that many of us. Great. God's going to do a powerful act. In fact, the more we are, sometimes the more we rely on ourselves rather than on what God can do. So the Midianites are routed. The nation want to proclaim Gideon as their king. He declines. You'll see that in chapter 8. He declines. He says, no, I will not rule over you, nor will my son. The Lord will rule over you. What does that show us about Gideon? That he's a man of integrity by this stage. He understands who God is and he understands his place before God. And he is not going to allow himself to be elevated to a position of authority like that when that is God's place. A man of integrity. I admire Gideon for that, because it's easy, isn't it, to be fated in our world. And our egos get rather big if we're not careful. Integrity and humility. He knows that the glory goes to God. And you know, even in that, there are still mistakes made. Just as a little caveat at the end, there's loot, because the Midianites and the Amalekites, they're all destroyed. And there's, of course, there's all the gold and the silver, etc. Sounds as though Gideon didn't take anything. What he did ask for is a gold earring, because all the Ishmaelites always wore gold earrings. And he asked for a gold earring from everybody's loot. And there was a lot of it. So he ended up with all these gold earrings. And he created an ephod with it. Well, an ephod, we hear about an ephod from the priest's robes, but there's also another form of ephod, if you like, which it seems as though that was a sort of an altar relic, I suppose, or whatever you want to call it. And he created this, and he put this, forget the robes, he created this from the spoils of the enemy, and he created it in Ophrah. And we're told that whilst he probably created it for all the best reasons, this is God's victory, it became a stumbling block for them all. Because what did they do over a period of time? They worshipped it. They put their eyes on that, on God's victory, if you like, rather than on God himself. We have to be careful. We have to be careful. We would be fools to think that in our sophisticated world we cannot and would not fall into exactly the same traps. Why do we read the Bible, for instance? Because we've been told to? Because we're told we must? Or because we want to discover what God is saying to us? Why do we serve God in his church? Because it's what we're expected to do? Or out of our love and gratitude for a God who has graced us with so much? You see, the Bible is God's word, but it can be used to bind people to such a point that they can't move. Jewish leaders showed us that with all the laws that they added to the Ten Commandments. And the church is God's chosen instrument, and yet it can be a source of control in the wrong hands. We have to be so careful. that we are always looking to God, not to the Bible, but to God. What are you saying through your word, Lord, to us? What are you saying through the church, Lord, to us? Not, oh, this is what we must do. Gideon, man of faith, counted as one of the outstanding heroes of Israel's early history. And yet at the outset, his heroism was not a product of his natural makeup, but as an outcome of a transforming spiritual experience. May we learn lessons from him and realize that we are a work in progress, that the promises God has made will be kept. We do not worship in vain. We worship the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. God has spoken, and faith says what he has spoken will be done.